right off the bat, I just want to say you've got Killer Elite, which is a compilation coming out that pretty much spans your entire career. What led you guys to pick the songs that you did?
I guess I'm trying to pick, of course, the songs that are most known by the fans and based on the reactions of the shows we've done throughout the years, and certain songs that we actually haven't played very much, but I have to say I really like the song, and people in the band really like the song, so it's kind of like it's the right song to put in. So it's kind of a good mixture of them from the hits that I would say. When I mean hits, doesn't mean you have to be Through the Fire and Flames, everyone play on the Guitar Hero, but you know, from what we can see from the fans on tour anyway.
Okay. And are you going to be playing any of those songs that you don't normally play live on the on tour now? Or at least to support it?
Yeah, we started doing the Killer Elite set earlier this year. I believe it was in... maybe it was May when we went to Japan for the first... because they released it earlier down there. And we played some songs we really haven't played for a long time. And some we haven't played before ever. So that's what we're doing on the set. They're trying to bring some old songs back and, you know, drop a few ones that we've been playing on the last Maximum Overload tour.
Okay. Now, for a lot of people that don't know, I guess, would you mind explaining, you know, Dragon Force's beginnings and, you know, up until you started basically spiraling to superstardom with the Guitar Hero games?
I'm not sure I'm the best person to describe it, but we're just trying to make the best music we can do, mixing so many styles that have inspired us, or we listen to, from the normal classic heavy metal to hard rock to extreme metal, something more brutal and fast thrash metal, and just try to throw it all into one and make it the best we can make it. And of course, make the songs as memorable as possible and with a twist to it and make it exciting.
Okay.
I don't know if that's a good description, but hey, that's the only way I can put it.
Well, it works. So tell me what else has been going on with you and Dragon Force.
We have, apart from touring for this Killer Elite release, and we'll be playing some shows, you know, we've been playing shows in Europe, we've done Japan, we'll be playing shows in America as well. We're also actually at the moment recording a new album for release next year. So we're busy doing either playing live or playing in the studio.
Okay. Have you got any titles for anything already, or are they just in progress right now?
Just in progress right now. So this, I can't really talk so much about it because it's not finished. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's looking good. You know, we're on schedule, so doing the live show also get us out of the studio instead of being stuck, you know, indoors all the time.
Okay. And what's it like to just kind of be in a studio one minute and the next minute to just kind of have an escape from the studio and go do a small string of dates and then come back into studio? What's the grind kind of like for you guys, for you?
I mean, it can be difficult because when you're in the studio, you just want to record. And then you got to get out and you come back, you don't feel like recording for a while after doing, you know, two festivals over the weekend. But you just have to kind of put yourself into it. The hardest part is getting it started. So in the studio, it's hard to get it started, but in the stage, or at least on a tour doing shows, that is your stage time. You have to play at that time. So in the studio, sometimes you wake up, you get up, you go, oh, okay, I'm going to do some recording. But you have to force yourself. So every day I wake up, I do what I need to do, and I start recording. Okay. Just don't even think about anything. Don't read useless stuff on the internet. Don't go read Facebook or anything useless like that.
Okay. And since you guys are, you know, always going back and forth between the road and the studio, I mean, you guys don't really take any breaks. What do you do to keep yourself, you know, still healthy and still in shape and everything like that?
Well, most people in the world, they have to work, you know, at least 5 times a week, and they don't get many holidays. So for us, it's no different, and we don't really complain about it. And that's just the way it goes. We have to work and try to improve ourselves and do what, you know, we're just lucky we get to do what we like to do. Yeah.
Okay. What was your first guitar?
It was a Squire Strat. And it was, I think I kept it for 1 year, and afterwards I had to get rid of it because it just wouldn't be, I wasn't able to do all this dive bomb and weird noises with guitar until I kind of exchanged it and put some money on top for an Ibanez guitar.
Okay, so since then, you've basically been with Ibanez ever since.
Yeah, since, yeah, pretty much apart from my first year of guitar playing, I've been playing Ibanez. I don't know how many years I've been playing guitar now. It's too long. 20 years, maybe?
Cool. And who would you say was your main three influences? I mean, there's obviously a lot of, like, Satriani and Steve Vai in there, but who else is, were you really into?
Apart from those guys, I like Tony McAlpine, Marty Friedman, I like a lot of those early Megadeth, Metallica albums. Mm-hmm. I like a lot of rock guitar players like George Lynch, Van Halen, of course. There's so many great players in the hard rock scene from the 80s. So a lot of those guys. And Dream Theater, of course. Yeah. The list goes on and on.
Right. One guy that you didn't mention was Jason Becker. I just want to know, have you ever seen the documentary about him?
I've seen one. I'm not sure when that was. That's why I go. Of course, I have all the Jason Becker albums. I remember ordering it years ago at their music shop because they wasn't stocking them. Yeah, and I discovered that after hearing some compilations, Shrapnel Records compilation. Yeah, there's just so many guitar players, hard for me to mention all of them. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. And what kind of practice techniques do you have?
Give you an example for the moment. Since I'm recording, my practice is I try to imagine things in my head and try to not even play the guitar when I'm trying to, let's say, do a guitar solo, and then try to play it straight away off my hand and work out things, you know, without really, how you're playing guitar solo but composing really in your head, and then try to translate in the guitar. To this practice is to stop the fingers making the decision and let your brain make the decision. I hope that makes sense for guitar players. So by thinking about it more than just trying to play straight away, and I can exercise make sure I'm making the guitar sing in my brain instead of my fingers taking over of exercises that sometimes are overdone.
Okay. It's like a brain push-up, basically.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
How many hours a day did you practice to get to the level that you are? For how long?
At the beginning, I used to play 6 to 8 hours a day. I mean, every moment I had, I would play the guitar for the first few years. And then to get how good I am now, I guess it's every single years of all the touring and all the studio recording, working together with musicians, everything play a part, and practicing the guitar is actually kind of a one dimension, only the one dimension of the guitar. There's so many ways by playing a lot of shows that you are technically, you're in a way practicing the guitar in a different environment, because if I do how many hours only sitting down, you know, at home practicing, you pretty much, I would say, it's impossible to translate the same amount of skill live when you're standing up in front of the audience. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the guitar, I mean, depending on what the point of view of it, performance of guitar performance is a certain way you have to be practiced too.
Okay. And I mean, you've recorded a bunch of albums over the years. Which album did you have the most difficulty recording?
The one that was most difficult to record was probably the Power Within, because there was some changes happening in the band at that time, so you know, it was a hard album to make, unfortunately. Yeah, I don't think it's a bad album, just it was hard, you know, change of singer and all these things, required a different view of the music and the band and the attention in different areas beyond the guitar. So it just didn't give me or Sam that much time to play the guitar.
Hmm. Was there ever a point, you know, during either that time or any other where it looked like that was going to be it for Dragon Force?
I haven't really felt like that before, so I guess not really. Okay. I mean, you get pissed off sometimes with people in the band, or sometimes you get, you know, pissed off the business side. But I'm not a person that gives up very easily, so it hasn't really came across my mind.
Okay. And what was the recording process like for your last album, Maximum Overdrive? Overload, I'm sorry.
Don't worry, I said that wrong a few times. the process then was, I don't remember now. I really think back. It was the first time we worked with producer Jens Borgren, so it was quite different that, you know, Sam and I are no longer the producers in charge of so many things. It was actually much easier because there was less responsibility in certain area, and we get to concentrate on the guitar playing instead of production.
Okay. And what was it like recording In the Line of Fire, or your live album?
Well, I burned I burned my laptop up and destroyed it by making that DVD because of the constant processing power required to edit that Blu-ray video. So the live show was good, but the hard part was put it together and edit all those video angles while I was on tour. So that was released while that tour was still happening, the Maximum Overload tour. That's why I edited on tour on the Maximum Overload tour and released on the Maximum Overload tour at the same time. So that was hard work. I guess the hardest thing was sending hard drive across countries. I haven't got a single hard drive getting through custom.
Wow.
They destroyed it because it's encrypted. The data is encrypted. So they think whatever stuff I have in there and delayed it by a month or dissected the hard drive.
Jesus. Yeah. So that almost didn't happen.
It was going to happen, but to deliver the masters, it was such a pain. I literally, almost, I had to upload, honestly, I was on tour and I went to a friend's house in Stockholm, not Stockholm, it was Gothenburg, and I left my laptop there on the day off to upload about 50 gig of data.
Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah, 50 gig upload, I mean, that's hard work.
Yeah, that must have taken hours. What's the hardest song to play live?
The hardest song to play live is the one you practice the least, I always say. So in a way, it's probably Through the Fire and Flames, because we have heard it a lot of times, we've played it a lot of times, and that's the song that people have probably heard the most times, so they have a reference or the image of it in the head of exactly how it sounds to them. But of course, throughout years and years of playing it, certain things change and you adapt and you move, you know, you improvise a little bit sometimes and it changes a little bit sometimes. So that is a hard song to sometimes people think, oh, it sounds a little bit different. Yeah, it does, because that was 2006 and this is 2016.
Right.
And there are lots of notes in that song, so you're never going to play exactly the same as the moment I recorded it in 2005. September 2005, yeah.
And I guess while we're on the subject of that song, when the whole Guitar Hero thing happened, I mean, I know you probably get this all the time. How, like, you guys just kind of got, like, super-duper famous, like, almost overnight, or seemingly overnight. I mean, how did you guys deal with, you know, the newfound fortune?
Excuse me. Well, the funny thing is, we were touring. We're doing a world tour before that video game actually came out. And we're doing a lot of shows. We're doing Ozfest, and we did another two or three head. We did three headlining tours in America, Ozfest. We toured with Killswitch Engage for them, something called No Fear Tour, and all around the world. So that was before the game actually came out. So I think the game obviously put a spotlight on us, but before that, we were already kind of used to the touring that we've been doing. So it wasn't really that much different. I was just surprised that, you know, people were talking about the song that much, and of course, it helped us get a gold disc for the single.
Okay. And I guess, you know, just on the subject of the gold disc and everything, about, like, I want to say April or March, I'm not even sure, but earlier this year, the RIAA made it possible to get a platinum album through streams and just online digital media, like even YouTube views and things like that. And, I mean, it's good because a lot of artists who may not have gone platinum otherwise went platinum, but at the same time, it kind of put a blemish on it now because literally anybody can go platinum at this point. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm sure we're not going to go platinum, so I think it's just the way the times have changed, and I think they probably done the right thing. If people really care so much about having a gold disc and stuff, you know, it's all just bragging rights, right? Yeah, it's kind of meaningless for music. It's just the way life is. So I'm saying it because people can't believe this band that plays music completely not commercial got a gold disc. So I don't care. I don't have a gold disc in my wall. But I guess it goes to adapting time. A lot of people listen to music on Spotify and things like that, and on YouTube. Guess is right. It makes sense to me. Yeah.
Okay. And what do you guys normally do when you have downtime on the road?
Of downtime on the road, probably off road, probably what we get to do. Downtime on the road is pretty much go to bed and do nothing, actually, for me.
Okay.
I personally, because I really kind of recharge on the day off. I know some people go out and party and go drinking in a bar on the day off. I never do. I don't even get out of the hotel.
Really?
Yeah. I like to do other things, yeah, but it's not off. Some people play video games and do stuff like that, but I don't really do any of that much. You know, just try not to be stressed out on the day, I guess. You know, just take it easy.
Yeah. Do you read at all?
No, I don't read at all, and I don't even have time to play video games. These days, I'm kind of learning how to repair Porsches. So.
Okay. Cool.
Porsche cars.
Oh, just, wow.
I don't know. What a weird hobby, right? I'm kind of learning how to learn, you know, how the certain 911s work and how you can fix if things go wrong.
What made you want to get into that?
I have no idea. I just kind of got into it. I guess I didn't want to get my car. I guess it's kind of cool to fix your own car when it breaks.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So,
kind of something to do when you're off, you know, away from just playing the guitar all the time. Do something different.
Right, right. Plus, you know, at the end of the day, if the job's not right where you have to take it to a mechanic, at least you know it's your fault and not, you know, something that somebody else did.
Exactly. You know what? I was fixing my car and I was looking at it and I was going, oh man, why did they not put this screw back what it was originally and all this stuff? It actually really annoys me, actually. So,
yeah.
So do it yourself, you know, unless you got someone trusted for the hard job. But what do I know? I'm just a beginner.
All right. How many Porsches have you restored so far?
I'm just working on only one I got.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what model is that?
Not that crazy.
Okay. Well, what model is that?
It's a Boxster S.
Okay. Cool. Are you a big fan of Top Gear at all?
No, I never watched that. Because
really?
I kind of never got into it. But I just kind of got into track driving, learning how to drive on the track.
Okay.
Minimize lap time. Just kind of a interesting physics, how to drive a car is so difficult.
Yeah, it's strange because you wouldn't think that it's all about the these subtle little nuances, but it is.
Yeah, it's became an art that I find very interesting, how to shift the weight of a car front and back, and, you know, to move it, to slow it down. So after doing that, you know, I started breaking things on the track, so start fixing it yourself.
So you drive your Porsche on the track?
Yeah.
Okay, cool, man.
Little hobby.
What's the fastest you've gone?
Fastest I've gone, 150 in the car.
Wow.
150 miles per hour, that's pretty fast.
Yeah, what does that feel like?
I mean, I kind of slow down after a while because I realize it's not worth it. it's more the driving at the medium speed and taking those corners in a extremely, you know, in the perfect way, that's actually more exciting than driving fast, you know, on a straight line or driving fast on the oval. You know, it's fun, it's cool, you know, the wind blowing your hair with you know, the top down, but the negotiate the corner the best you can and link them up is kind of been the most interesting thing for me now.
Right. Have you ever had any close calls on the track?
I've spun out in the rain. I've spun out, you know, oversteering. I've spun out. Last time I spun out, which was earlier this year, a car blew the transmission and put oil all over the tracks. And off I went when I hit that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But no crashing so far.
Something you want to try as well?
It sounds cool, man. If I ever had the time or the place, because in New York there's not really any tracks or anything, unless maybe if you go upstate or Long Island or something. But over where I am, we don't have anything like that.
Yeah, I started doing it in California because it's always sunny.
Mm.
Supposed to be, but yeah, I've been there in the rain.
Do you have any other non-musical hobbies?
Martial arts, jiu-jitsu.
Okay.
Yeah, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I've been doing a long time. I used to do other martial arts, and that's another good thing. A bit dangerous for my fingers.
Mm.
It seems like all the things I do get sounds a little bit dangerous now.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's good fun.
Cool. How long have you been doing those?
Jiu-Jitsu, I started in 2005. So it's been a long road of training on and off. I used to do it on tour as well, which was great. Do it on tour. And I've trained with... Matt Heafy, who's you know, really good now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's trained on tour all the time. Matt Heafy from Trivium.
Right.
And it's cool to see that, you know, the other musicians doing it. So hopefully we do another tour with Trivium again and we get to train jiu-jitsu every day.
Hmm. Have you ever trained with Dave Mustaine at all? Have you ever gotten that opportunity?
No, I've met Dave Mustaine a number of times. He's really cool, but we never kind of talked about martial arts for some reason.
Huh. Interesting. I'm not sure. I mean, I assume that he still practices, but I don't know how often.
Yeah, it's not easy for musicians on tour, especially. I'm sure he has an extremely busy schedule.
I can only imagine.
But you know, once if you've been doing it that long, it never goes away. It's kind of part of you. You know, become you know, part of your muscle memory forever.
Any specific reason why you got into it?
I was into Jackie Chan and Bruce Lee, all those movie stars back then, you know. And then I was watching the Ultimate Fighting Championship number 3. It was the first one I got into.
Wow.
And that kind of slowly got me into martial arts and to doing it properly and then doing jiu-jitsu as well.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Do you still watch UFC at all?
Yeah, definitely. I watch it whenever I can. When possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you think of Brock Lesnar coming back just on the one-off to do UFC 200?
I find it a bit bizarre, and especially, I mean, I wouldn't want to come back in the UFC and fight Mark Hunt. I mean, you know, that's gonna hurt. But hey, good. I can see nothing is easy, so it's good for him to you know. Do it again. I don't know how much work it required to step in to do any kind of martial arts competition. It would be fun. I'll be watching it.
Hmm. And do you think Conor McGregor has a shot at beating Nate Diaz in the rematch?
There's always a shot, for sure. it's always a shot to for either fighter to win. I think in any fight, you know, you like this, it will be interesting. It's I'm not that excited about the fight because kind of seen it already. You know, win or lose, I'm not that excited about it. But I actually found that Michael Bisping winning the title really interesting.
Yeah, that was a surprise.
And you know, good on him. He's been in the UFC for so long, and he's been fighting so many people. And you know, it's great. You can see, never give up, right? Always kind of go for it. And it'll be interesting.
Right, and I mean, on top of that, I mean, personally, I'm looking more forward to Cormier and John Jones.
Yeah, that's going to be pretty insane for sure.
Yeah,
I mean, that's going to be a tough fight. That's not going to be a, you know, 30 seconds knockout. It's going to be a brutal.
No, I think they're going to go the distance. Honestly, I think Jones is going to knock him out in the last round. But I could be wrong, you know. For all I know, Cormier's probably had more time to train, so he might. So I think maybe he might do it in the third round.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I might be changing my mind here.
Yeah. So many things can happen in MMA. We just don't know. But that is going to be one hell of a fight.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. And yeah. I mean, do you think that do you think Ronda Rousey can get back her momentum and reclaim her title?
I'm sure she can. But of course, I can see, you know, the fame can, or, you know, she has other things to do.
Right.
Instead of just training martial arts, which obviously hurts the training. Maybe. I'm not really at that level to be a comment, but it'll be good to see her back.
Yes.
It kind of makes it more exciting now, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think now that her schedule has probably, you know, got a lot more calm. I mean, of course, she's obviously still going to be very busy, but now that she's had a lot more time to train, and now that she's focusing a lot more on getting back in the ring, I think she'll regain most of, if not all, of what she's lost.
Yeah, I guess everyone's improving and getting better, so it's always hard to tell what the future brings. And UFC, you know, they always try to find someone else to beat the champion, right?
From right.
Outside organization.
Well, on top of that, I mean, CM Punk just announced that he's thinking that he might be in line for a title shot at some point now. But, I mean, he still has to get over that first fight in September, so we'll have to see what happens. But he's going into it pretty confident. I mean, that's the guy that he is. Do you think he's gonna end up winning against Mickey Gall in September?
To be honest, I have never heard of CM Punk before.
Okay.
And I've never seen him fight.
Well, he hasn't fought in the UFC yet.
Or something like that, right?
Yeah, he wrestled for the WWE and independent promotions for about 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So this is his first fight.
Who knows? I mean, maybe it's a kind of good thing, you know. I'm sure you'll be or everyone in the UFC would have had enough, or at least trained a lot to go in. And if you're going in without people having to see tapes on you, maybe that helps too.
Hmm.
And no one knows what he's going to do. What's his strength? Yeah.
Maybe, right.
maybe he'll be knocking people out.
Yeah. You have no idea. I mean, everybody thinks that everybody is just writing him off as just getting his ass kicked right away just because he has a lot of nagging injuries from his other career, but realistically, you never know. I mean, nobody expected Holly Holm to beat Rousey. Nobody expected Miesha Tate to beat Holly Holm. So it's pretty much anyone's game at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, should be a fun year, I think, of the UFC.
Yes.
Again.
And yeah. I guess my last two questions are, what's your favorite food, and what's your favorite film, and your favorite director?
My favorite film? Aliens.
Okay, really?
Aliens, I guess, is the one that kind of caught me kind of most when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think that's such a cool movie. That's just the way the whole thing was set up. Director, no interest, don't really care, don't know much about directors.
Okay.
And I guess food, I guess I have to say Asian food.
Anything specific?
I can't really tell you. I like really amazing Italian food and really good French food and really good Chinese food. I can eat some food, I can eat bad version of it, but I can't really handle eating really bad Chinese food, for example.
Okay.
It's something I grew up eating, right?
Right.
Yeah, I can eat, you know, bad Mexican food, I can eat bad something, but you know, but that's so just don't serve me bad Chinese food. I'll be going, oh my god, just complain all day long.
Yeah, I'm the same way. You could, yeah, I grew up eating Italian food all my life. Every Sunday we have the traditional Italian family dinner. Don't ever take me to the friggin' Olive Garden.
You know, that's the problem with me, Italian food. I really only eat it in Italy or really great restaurants, but I just can't handle bad Italian food either.
Yes.
It's just destroying me how people can make pasta and leave it there for like hours and just put it in and heat it up, and that's they charge you $15 for it. It's just insane.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. 20 if you want to put some shrimp that's just been frozen for, you know, God knows how long.
Absolutely can't handle it. I'm not even Italian. Well, we have Italian in the band, so
right.
I hear about it. Oh, this is not. I want al dente. Crazy Italian.